podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Clock. It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Clock.
A camel turner.
Hello and welcome to episode 14, season 12 of the Fighting Cock podcast. How you doing, boys? Felonious Filth joins us, as does Ricky. Felonious, how you doing? We did our five statements reaction to the game yesterday. So if you want to hear more of Felonious's thoughts on the game, you can go and subscribe to patreon.com/fightingcock. But how you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm good, good. Bit weird. I mean, with all the Arsenal fallout, it almost feels like we didn't win, but I kind of got over myself.
What are you
and I'm
talking
happy
about?
That we won again.
Yeah, well,
I don't know. For you, it did.
For me, it felt like we won.
I know. I just kind of feel it's almost like we won weeks ago, the Brighton game. But yeah, all good. All good in the hood.
You've got to gain some fucking resilience, mate. Like, they may be.
We all have weak moments. I mean, you know, even Chrissy Mancini got, you know, had to take a knee against George Groves, you know, even the best of us.
Indeed.
But I'm here now.
Yeah, you are. You are here and I'm grateful for it. Ricky, how are you doing, mate?
I'm all good, mate. All good. 3 points. So.
All good in the hood.
Solidified the third. So I'm all good.
Mate, we'll solidify much more than that, including your mum, later in the podcast. But before. Before we do that, we have beaten Brighton, but how did you feel about the so Spurs drew against Frankfurt and we played really, really well and we beat Brighton and we hadn't conceded in those two games, and you know, if you had to take those two results before it started, you would have taken them, but I was surprised about how emotional everybody was about Ventroni passing away, and that's because I have obviously no insight into what's going on in the club, and it had a massive impact on Kane, on all of them, on Kane. You look at Lloris when he like held his shirt up at the end, and the fan base, the away fans were sort of singing his name and stuff. I think by and large we underplayed how significant it was, Rick.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the timelines.
Yeah, it's hard to know, isn't it?
If he passed away before the Frankfurt game, or if it was he was ill then. Well, actually, it was. Did he pass away on the Thursday? So he must have played on the Tuesday.
I
don't know. Doesn't matter. But I mean, you have seen the outpouring from all players. On social media, and like you said about Lloris with the shirt, Conte has worked with a guy for like 30 years. From Conte's interview, he said that he spoke to him, I think it was on the Thursday.
Yeah, man, that was so tough to listen to.
He was feeling ill, he had a bit of a fever, and you know, that he said, you know, he was more worried about missing training or missing work. And that was the last time he spoke to him. And it's, you know, you don't know out of the players and the club who knew that he was ill, and it's really hard to take when it's unexpected. And even if people did know, I think they, you know, it's hard to read between the lines and stuff, but it was like it was under control, or it was being monitored closely, and he just took a real bad turn for the worse.
Yeah.
And having to get yourself motivated. I mean, to motivate yourself, obviously, you're going to do it for him and get the win and play as best as you can. But still, man, having to play through that. And also the post-match interview, and it went to Kane.
Yeah.
And they asked him. And there was like this few seconds where he was going to go. You could just hear it in his voice. You could see it in his eyes, like tearing up. And immediately it was just like a stick in the throat for me. And I was just like, fucking hell, man. Like these, they're all feeling it. And I'm like, we're all feeling it as well.
You saw Conte's reaction as well in the build up to the game, like when they had the minute silence, like how that this is a guy who's he's shared every moment of glory he's had as a manager together. He knows their kids. Like, in the press conference, he talked about how he mentioned his kids' names and his wife, and that's something else. It's like any of us, like who do something like decent or involved in something decent, and you do it together. It's I can't imagine what it might have been like for him to listen to Conte to listen to that, and Gian's family to be a part of that. But fundamentally, intrinsically, within the club, he was loved, and outside the club, he was loved. So, yeah, man, it's grim. It's grim. But also, you know, it was a celebration of his life and the input he's had as a in football and outside of football. I don't know what else we can say that hasn't been said already. It just felt like we should, even though we, you know, talked about it in the last podcast, but it felt like it was pertinent to mention it again, given, you know, what went on at the weekend. Anyway, feels like trite to go on to this, but we move towards the game against Brighton. T, what did you make of it overall? It was would you say it was a good performance, a satisfactory performance? Was you happy with it?
I was relatively happy. I think it was clear from the outset that we weren't going to put on a 5-star performance and stick 6 or 7 on these guys. It was going to be, you know, a very attritional game, and that's how the game bore out in the end. And, you know, I'm fairly happy they went to a tough place to get the win. I didn't realise how good Brighton's home record was. You know, we were the last team to beat them at their ground, last away team to beat them at their ground.
Yep.
But it was a great result in the context of how Brighton have done this season. You know, they lost their manager because he was obviously very sought after. It's not like they've sacked a manager and have brought someone in. You know, the guy they brought is very reputable with De Zerbi. And, you know, we went with 3-5-2. There's lots of talk on, you know, podcasts and on social media that we probably maybe should go to 3-5-2. And we looked fairly comfortable with it for the most part, but it's one of those that it's still a work in progress. I think it would be nice if we had a more progressive midfielder in the central three than just three people who are more known for their holding abilities than actually going forward. But I think this at the end of the season, we'll look on that as a massive 3 points.
Yeah, 100%, I agree. Rick, a few fans have been saying that outside and inside Spurs fan base as well, to be fair, are saying that Conte's football is poor. What do you make of that accusation? Are we playing poor football?
No, I don't think we are playing poor football, but I do feel like we are playing a pragmatic, controlled way of football. So it's very easy to look at a team like City, free-flowing at the moment, scoring loads of goals, and to say that's the way you play football, that and Beal, and anything else that is different to that, that isn't entertaining, is poor. And it's easy to pick up lots of different stats and say Tottenham are one of the worst in this, that, and the other, and to show that narrative. But if you were to come somewhere between the middle to say that we are super defensive or super attacking, we're somewhere in between. I'd like us to be a bit more attacking, but I mean, the way we play and the way we set up and the way that Conte has his teams playing, it's never going to be all guns blazing. And I think it's easy to dismiss it as poor with the stats that you have, and that we haven't been absolutely chinning teams. It annoys me, really, if I'm honest. but I can also understand where it comes from, because, you know, people pay their money and they want to be entertained. And also there's this kind of the social media wars, as to be like there's no in between. It's like either you're the greatest attacking team or you're fucking shit and you've got 11 men behind the ball, and that's it. There's no in between.
If we started the season knowing, T, that we were, after nine games, going to be on 20 points, third in the league, and, you know, doing what... You'd take that, wouldn't you? Like, regardless of all of the things that have gone before us, you'd take that in a heartbeat. I would have done. We wouldn't imagine that Arsenal would be top. You'd think Liverpool or Man City would be. But Liverpool have fallen off. Arsenal have come to the fore, and they do look good. And I think, like... A massive part of the frustrations as a Spurs fan we're feeling is because Arsenal are doing well. But you like the position we're in right now, 6-1, 2 drawn and 1 defeat. You know, a goal difference of 10. That's a healthy position to be in.
No, absolutely. And we're missing vital player in Kulusevski. Sonny hasn't really come to the fore this season for the most part. And in spite of these things, we're still... You know, we're still in touch, you know, with the leaders of the league. I think what Spurs fans probably would have liked this season is to be in touch with the leading pack, maybe back in the January, start of February, just be in touch with the leaders. And we seem on track to do that. I've often said that in a World Cup season, when the World Cup is in the middle of the season, there's going to be some freak results. Arsenal being top of the league is one. Liverpool being 10th, I think, is another one. So... there's going to be some very weird results this season, but we've had some tough games. We've gone to Stamford Bridge, we've gone to the Emirates, we've gone to Upton Park, we've gone to the Amex, and you know we've done reasonably well. Arsenal have only had one big away game, I think that was against Man U, and they got slumped. So it shows that, you know, there's a long way to go. We shouldn't lose heart yet. I mean, we, you know, I think the elephant in some people's rooms is Pochettino and the way we looked under him, but. Sometimes you have to be a bit more practical with the squad that we have. We're in the midst of a rebuild. And I think with all things considered, we should be happy with where we are right now.
About that Pochettino thing, though, is that you could say the same about Liverpool and Klopp. Like, Klopp had Liverpool playing in an all-conquering side. They look unbeatable. They were superb. Only defeated twice by a Man City side that will never disappear. You see this season how good they are, and they have Haaland and Pep and all the money in the world. All kinds of ways that they can pay Haaland nearly £900,000 a week if he hits all these bonuses, which he's naturally going to do. They find a way to do it, so they're always going to be there. But Klopp and Liverpool have sort of run the course over the last 4 or 5 years with them. And now you're looking at them like... And there are some questions out there whether or not Klopp will last the season. So, looking at Pochettino's Tottenham and what we have currently isn't... You can make the comparison, but it's not helpful, I don't think. Rick, 3-5-2, we switched to it this week. A lot of us have been calling for that. I was really comfortable watching that game, and this is a good Brighton side. Not even, like, without Potter, this is still a good Brighton side. A good manager who plays possessive attacking football. And with the 3-5-2, they weren't able to. We had control of possession for a lot of the time. They had their moments, but I feel like generally we were in control of the game. Did you prefer that formation, or would you prefer to go back to a 3-4-3 should Kulusevski come back next week?
It's a bloody tough one, mate. I tell you that. I think we looked really good. Had a lot of chances first half, and then the second half, Brighton were a bit more busier. But we contain them. It's always like in the back of my mind. So we've been playing 3-4-3, and I have also been saying I get a bit worried that we're going to get overrun, or we have been overrun in midfield. So we switched to 3-5-2. That's going to solve all our problems. But then when we're attacking, and when we're breaking, we just have the two up top. And I do kind of feel that Kulusevski, if he's fit, the guy has to play. He just has to play because he's fucking mustard. And he's such a driving force, and he's such a tricky player. And he puts some great balls in. And I just don't know. I mean, if we did go to 3-5-2, is there like, is there a world where Kulusevski plays and he plays just behind the front two?
Potentially,
I don't know, because he said personally that that's his favoured position. He likes to play number 10.
But that 3-5-2 isn't. We don't have a number 10 particularly. Like we maybe potentially we could do, but it is a very much a flat midfield. And Bentancur is that advancing midfielder. And Skip played it as well in certain games under Conte as well. But you're right. If Kulusevski is fit, make him fit inside that formation. Or if he can't fit in a 3-5-2, then we have to play a 3-4-3 because he's that good. Is that what you're saying, Rick?
Yeah, totally. And if I'm being honest, watching there wasn't a cavernous difference as to say, fuck, yeah, right, 3-5-2, we've absolutely demolished Brighton, we've controlled them in every bit, we had like the best possession we've had, and it just wasn't it wasn't as clear. I'd like to see us play this formation a bit more to be able to kind of make a deciding factor.
We weren't absolutely midfield where we have been previously. The two-man midfield of Højbjerg and Bentancur, while they've done their job, it felt, in my opinion, it felt like we had control of the midfield and we dictated the flow of the game. We had a better possession stat than Brighton, who under this manager, not just Brighton specifically, but throughout his career, has been famed for having possession, and we wouldn't allow him to have it. I just feel like we've got the quality to hit them with just two up front.
They had 59%, by the way.
Did they?
Yeah.
I think you're talking bollocks. Yeah. I'm just going to pretend that you didn't say that. And
cut it out.
What, they had a better possession. It didn't feel like that to me.
Maybe the pass completion was maybe lower, but they had 59% more possession than over us.
What, they had nearly
14 goal attempts to 8, four shots on goal to 3, and so on.
How about fucking you fuck off?
Flav, I just want to go back to like when you were saying about Bentancur playing that little bit further forward.
Just quickly, do you know what that was? Sorry, mate. Sorry. I'm so desperate for the 3-5-2 to work that I've just built stats in my own head that support my idea that don't exist. If that's true, 60% to pretty much 60% to Brighton.
Yeah.
Wow. Whoa. We did switch to 3-4-3, and that's where we lost possession in the latter part of the game. So, yeah, we're both right, in a way.
In a way.
Sorry, what was you going to say, Rick?
Talking about Bentancur, and I think I like the role that he was playing. He was getting a bit more forward, and he was driving in that kind of final third, and he also had a shot that was saved. Good shot as well.
Yeah, it was good.
It's just nice to see, like, Højbjerg this season. There was a lot of complaints, and from me as well, last season, that he was a bit one-dimensional, and that when he got into attacking positions, that he didn't play the right ball, or he wasn't looking for passes, it was always safe. And towards the tail end of last season, and especially this season, he's been fantastic.
Well, Højbjerg was man of the match again, this was a player that we thought we might be able to upgrade. Maybe Basuma is going to shunt him out of the team. And has he been our best player this year, T? Do you think that Højbjerg, have you been impressed by him?
He's been the most consistent, but it's kind of in a damning of faint praise, really, that he has been the best, because so many of the players you expect more from have been out of sorts. I mean, Romero, who, you know, did on this podcast for a long time, has had a bit of a mixed bag of a season so far. Kane's been up and down. Son's had his own issues, even being dropped for the Leicester game. So a lot of our players who we look towards haven't been in the best form, so it's good that Højbjerg has taken up the baton and been a lot more consistent in his performances. And, you know, against Brighton, he did great. And as I said on the Patreon pod, him and Eric Dier in particular, they're two, you know, locker room guys. The guys in the locker room who everyone just respects, and they get a performance out of people. So what Højbjerg gives is more than what we see in the pitch. He's obviously he's got the whole Viking thing going on, but it's a lot more to it than that. He's very... he strikes me as being very emotionally intelligent as well. And I think he's, you know, when we eventually win our trophy and Højbjerg is part of it, there'll be a lot of talk as to the influence that he's had since he's joined Tottenham.
Yeah, agreed. Matt Doherty came in for Emerson. Rick, how do you think he got on? Actually, before you answer that, there's a question from FPL Masterpiece. He says, what did you think of Doherty's performance? Was it enough to convince you that, one, Doherty is miles better than Royale, and two, Conte just likes to rest on his laurels, probably. He can be wrong in his assessments. Feels like FPL Masterpiece might have a bugbear with Conte.
It's got an agenda.
He's got an agenda. It feels like it stinks. This question stinks of agenda, which is fine. It's fine. We've all got our own. Rick. What did you make of Doherty's performance? I thought he was good. He was tidy.
Yeah. I thought it was good. And there was early signs which I liked. I think it was Bentancur putting a delicious ball down the channel for Doherty to run onto, and he just took one too many touches or miscontrolled it, and he toe-ended it out. But it was the fact that he made that run, he got in that position, he kind of went behind their back line, ready to kind of pull the ball across. Just that little bit of rustiness let him down. And then there was another ball where Cesc come tearing down the left, swung the ball in, and it's really hard to control or even take a shot. And Doherty had a go.
He got on it.
His left foot, and got on it, and it just kind of looped over the bar. But again, he was in that position for, like, Conte likes the wingers to get forward and for that ball to come across. So he was in that position. He had a go, which both signs really positive. And then in the second half, there was a tackle. I think it's been quite made of where Dyer goes over to Doherty, and they kind of butt heads, as to say, fucking well in there, son, like a last ditch toe end. So I thought he, for being out for so long, he had a really positive game, and it wasn't a game where I was thinking, are we actually going to be better off Raw? And I'm looking forward to him getting more games, getting a bit more momentum, some more rhythm, getting that rustiness off. I do think he had a good game. I do want to mention that I read an interview with him, and he was, I think the interviewer asked him that, whether Conte's where it was just a lot of it was taken. I don't know if it was taken out of context, but Conte was saying, you know, I'm not going to put Doherty in. I want to win the game. Do you think I'm stupid? Or along those lines, anyway.
It wasn't about Conte, though. I mean, it wasn't about Doherty. It was about him deflecting the reporter's question about, you know, are you making the wrong decisions? That's what I think it was about. It's not about Doherty.
But, and then Doherty answered that and said, a lot of the lads and other people saw the interview and it was taken out of context. It wasn't about me. And then they said, does it motivate you? And he said, no, that comment doesn't motivate me, because it wasn't, like, about me.
Yeah.
Which I thought was quite interesting. I mean, like, I would have been like, yeah, it does motivate me. Like, if someone's fucking panning me or mentions my name, I'm fucking shove it right up your ass, mate.
I'd be thumbing my own dick up my own ass, going, oh, God, why? This is the only way I can get love. This is the only way I can get love.
So I thought it's quite interesting that he was quite level-headed about that. But then I thought his performance was encouraging, shall we say.
Yeah. What do you obviously, Doherty's going to be playing the next two games at least. Do you think he can do enough in those two games? And I think he did enough in this game to say that he's in competition with Emerson Royale. Do you think he can do enough in the next two games to suggest that we can see a right wing back role secured for Matt Doherty for the foreseeable future?
He's definitely got a chance. I think, you know, we've got Everton next, and God, who's the fixture after that? Is it Man U away? Yeah, we never went at Old Trafford, but I think he's he needs to get match fitness. I don't think Conte said anything about the form or the abilities of Matt Doherty. It's more his match fitness. I didn't feel that his fitness is up to par. And I think towards the end of the game, he looked a bit knackered. I mean, he had enough energy to make that last ditch tackle that Ricky mentioned. So he's probably got, I think he'll have a good chance of giving Royale some competition But Conte really likes Royale. You know, I mean, I think he probably wishes that the 800,000 quid didn't get mentioned before the Arsenal game. But it shows that he's willing to improve himself as a player. And yeah, I think Doherty's got a good chance. There's so many games this month anyway. I think it would be good if Doherty starts in the Frankfurt game as well to give him another 90 minutes under his belt. If he starts Royale, then I think it's fairly evident that it's Royale's position to lose regardless of the sending off against Arsenal.
Yeah, indeed.
You know the tackle from, was it Matty Cash that tackled Doherty last season and injured him?
Yeah, it was.
And he had to have surgery, and he's 30, loses his place at right back. Do you think Doherty in the back of his head is like going to be like, when he sees Matt Cash, he's just going to fucking boot him up in the air?
Put it on him. Like,
Yeah, exactly.
Just lay him out. It's one of them ones where, you know, he's cussed your mum. Like, when you're back in school, and the geezer's cussed your mum, and you haven't had a chance to meet him after school, and a couple of weeks have passed, you haven't seen him, and then you see him in the hallways. And he's like, all right, man. He's forgotten about what he's done. And you just lamp him like straight down the throat. Punch.
Snooker ball in a sock.
Yeah, yeah. Just wrap a snooker ball around his nut. Just say, yeah, this is what you've done. And this is the thing. He's like, Matty Cash is a good fullback. He's good. Like, they all love him over there. You don't know what you've done. And there are consequences for your actions. It's what I say to my son all the time. He's like, how you behave, there is a reaction to that. And that reaction is generally the price you have to pay. So Matt Doherty has to put it on Matt Cash the next time they see each other. It's not about, oh, it's all in the sport of the game. What he did to him, that challenge wasn't in the sport of the game. It was Steven Gerrard, a manager who's completely out of his depth, doesn't know what he's doing, as charged Matty Cash with, just these young men who, you know, and he's like, oh, I've won Champions League. Did you see Istanbul? He made Matty Cash watch Istanbul four times that week.
Back to back.
And he wasn't allowed to leave or eat his dinner until he'd watched that the miracle of Istanbul.
And Gerrard's pausing shit as well. He's pausing that the goal he got back to B1 and rewinding it as well. So look at this. Look how I beat my man. Yeah. Watch it again.
That could be you, Matty Cash. But the reality is, it could never be you, Matty Cash. So you've done that on Matt Doherty, and now because of that, you've stunted his career where he was on an upward trajectory. Everybody needs to put it on Matty Cash. Get him.
Do you reckon, like players like Matty Cash afterwards was just like, oh, fucking hell, man, lads, has anyone got Doherty's number? Like, I need to message him. Like, I need to say sorry. And he's like, what's that? I didn't mean it, mate. It's just one of those things and stuff like that. And Doherty's just put, you wait.
Yeah, you wait.
That's it.
It's like
you wait.
It's like when you go out with the boys and you've dug one of their missuses out. So, you fucking pig. You're a pig. I've always hated you. You've made my mate's life so bad. It's like, fuck the three kids you have together. I've always hated you. It's one of them ones. It's like, oh God, he wakes up so regretful. God, I shouldn't have said that. I believe it, but I shouldn't have said it. I called my best mate's wife a pig. We'll win there. A great time to let you know that the Fighting Cock is sponsored by NordVPN. And you know what's great about NordVPN is that Ricky doesn't have it. Like, he's come out, he give it a big bollocks. Oh yeah, I can do it. And you don't have it. Why don't you have it, Ricky? Don't be honest.
Scared, don't I?
Scared of. So this. So you don't. This is the thing. Is that this is a man, Ricky, and I love you, and you're my best mate. But I've never met a man who's more afraid of being exposed on the internet as you.
Yeah, it's true.
I tell you what.
I don't know why. So even if I was exposed on the internet, nothing would happen.
No, I'm not talking about people finding out your personal details. I'm not, and NordVPN will protect your personal details if you have it in the right folders and whatnot. If you use it right, no one's ever going to get you, Rick. But as someone who's so conscious of his personal details and your bank information, whatever it might be, to not have NordVPN is ridiculous. I'll pay for it for you because it will give you a sense of security that you wouldn't otherwise have, Rick.
I nearly this would be a prime example of like, I just tell me whether I'd be able to watch this or not. This is weird. Like I always go on these, but you know, when you get caught down a rabbit hole and you're like, you're just clicking through.
Yeah.
And, I found out that, Carmella in Sopranos, Edie Falco, I think her name is, she did a Who Do You Think You Are in America. And I really wanted to watch it. And I think it's on YouTube or it's on something. And I got there and it wouldn't allow me to watch it because I wasn't in that location. And I was like, I had NordVPN, I'd be able to watch it, wouldn't I?
Yeah, you would. Do you know what else? I was looking on...
T is shrugging at me.
I'm like, come on.
And pulling a face.
Come on.
I'm sorry.
Rick, do you remember back in the day when, I would say in the mid-2000s, when me and you were going out all the time and we're getting up to some naughty stuff? Like, these are pictures that you wouldn't want anybody to see nowadays. And I was I was looking on my Google Drive, and for some reason I'd uploaded all of these images from the days there. We would go out, I'd get up to all sorts, and you would photograph me, and then the next day, even regardless of your hangover, you would tag me in photos, and my eyeballs are just, my eye sockets are just like, you know, they were alive. They were like 10 pence saucers. Pieces. Yeah, saucepans. Yeah. Saucers. And you would tag me in them. And like, Ricky, what the fuck are you doing? Why do you keep tagging? You kept going, oh, sorry. You weren't sorry. You knew exactly what you're doing. You wanted to make yourself look more sociably acceptable than you were. And you were using my saucepan eyeballs as a way to...
This isn't true. I was celebrating our friendship, going out and...
Bullshit.
And, you know...
What amount of times I asked you to please do not tag me in those photos? Please do not tag me. And you went, yeah. All right. Sorry, I'll tag you. And then the next weekend.
The lesson in all this is always wear shades when doing that sort of thing.
My point is, if you have historical images that you don't want anyone to get, and I'm sure that anyone listening to this has a Google Drive or has some sort of backed up images, and Ricky, you have backed up images that you don't want people to
this is true. This is bloody true.
Well, NordVPN will sort you out.
So. I think there's been one occasion I've had to say to someone, please take that down. Just take that down.
This is a weekly occurrence for me. We're being friends with Ricky. So what are you doing? Look at me. Look at the state of me, Ricky. Why are you sharing this with your...
This is all true. I've got no defense because this did happen regularly. I'm sorry. I was young and I was excitable.
It was exciting times.
But the good thing with NordVPN, you can also have it on your phone and all of your devices as well. So
can you?
A lot of these apps track you from the app to different websites. So if you have one NordVPN login, you can use it on your phone as well. Cause that's what I do with mine. So. Yeah, it covers your devices, Rick. I mean, come on, the evidence is overwhelming. It's also, they've got 5,600 servers plus, and they're in bare countries as well. So you could be almost anywhere in the world, get them cheap flights, get your shit, man.
Every time we do this, it sounds like, we're reading, obviously, NordVPN sponsors of the podcast. But it's genuinely useful. Like, you can, if you...
It is.
The people that listen to this podcast, they're discernible gentlemen and women, right? They travel. They go all over the place. They don't want to pay the money. Like, you can be discernible and not have to pay the... Rick, this comes back to you. You can save so much money by having NordVPN. Like, you can save on your Netflix. You can save on your Amazon Prime if you have that. You can save on fucking Spotify. All the good shit that we get, that we have to pay a fortune for, you can get it so much cheaper with NordVPN. Anyway, more of that next episode of the Fighting Cock podcast. But to get it... I need my glasses here. NordVPN.com/TheFightingCock. Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to NordVPN.com/TheFightingCock to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan, including 4 months free if you pay up front for a year. It's completely risk-free and you can get your money back in 30 days. So try it. If you don't like it, get your money back. It's no risk. Right, okay.
You can have a go, innit?
You better get out of here. And then just going back to what Chun said, he described a blue-eyed Brazilian rocket that he'd been looking for years. So he, this is a situation that a lot of men, I'm sure women who are listening to this, found themselves in, where they've found a particular clip on the internet that has blown their mind and they always want to return to it. But, you know, with things like Pornhub, disappears. And generally the reason why it disappears is there's some sort of copyright that is involved that, that means that because you're geo-locked, if you don't have a VPN like Nord, that you can't access it. And after years, because of NordVPN, John has been returned to the blue-eyed Brazilian woman. And
reunited.
He's been reunited. And I had a look at it and I was like, I don't know what the fuss is about. But, you know, John likes it. And a lot of people like
it. You know, it's a nice story. Asked the question today, but I'll ask it again. Are you guys familiar with milking?
What does that? Well, I don't even know what that means. What are you saying?
So basically, it's like when a woman milks a man in a porno scene, essentially, right?
What do you mean? Like a cow?
Yeah, but she's stimulating his prostate when she's doing so.
Okay, so why do you know so much about it?
Yeah, because I was having a look for some porn today, and I kind of came across that. Well, not quite, not literally, because I was at work, obviously, good boy and that. But it's called Milked Him, and it's a lot of anal in this. I mean, they're both eating out each other's arses, and she had him on all fours, tongue in his bumhole, and two hands. So one hand is on the base of his knob, and the other one's just pulling them off like he'd milk a cow. And then his legs are shaking. Yes, his legs are shaking. Anyway, NordVPN. That helped me find it.
Yeah, get involved. You want that content?
Would you be up for that?
Sorry. Would I be up
would
for that?
Would you be up for that? Yeah.
Can never say never. Never say never. I mean, it just feels weird that the guy is submissive. Because normally in porn, the bloke's normally, you know, almost not submissive. There's normally, you know, the bloke, the alpha. But
why do I
in this moment, he was kind of put on his knees.
Why is it that every time we do the NordVPN reads that it always goes back to the very base level of what men get up to?
We're going to get pelters on Reddit for not being as refined as other podcasts, but we are what we are. It's been 11 years. This is us.
Suck a dick.
This is it, man.
Suck a dick or a fanny, whatever you want to say.
Or the back of your hand. You know, whoever works.
Yeah, whatever you want, just suck it. News today that the name rights have come out with the fact that it could be Google. Ricky, how do you feel about the fact that White Hart Lane will be called the Google Stadium by Sky Sports forever?
I'm not really that. I was going to say I'm not that bothered, but we do refer to the Gooners' ground as the Emirates.
They never consciously called it Ashburton Grove. Because of the type of fan base they are and how weak and
they just weird, gave up. Yeah,
they gave up immediately. Will we give up?
When I was trying to book tickets for Arctic Monkeys the other week, I could have sworn that their gig in Manchester and it had Emirates Old Trafford or something like that, which that threw me. I didn't think Old Trafford hasn't had its name changed, has it?
No.
Is it a different venue?
No.
It might be the cricket ground. Okay.
Yeah, might be.
They play cricket at Old Trafford.
And City's ground. What City's ground?
Eastlands.
City of Manchester.
It's Eastlands originally, but it's Etihad.
Yeah, so we do call
it the Commonwealth Games.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Is that, look, as a fan base, we have to just maintain that. And Daniel Levy and he won't like this sort of conversation. Not that we have any influence at all, but it will never, regardless of how much money anyone pays and the amount of money that a rights holder would pay to name the stadium won't be insignificant, but we'll always call it White Hart Lane. Apparently, since it opened like 3 or 4 years ago, it's been the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Wouldn't have you ever referred to it as the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium and not checked yourself if you have? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do always refer to it as White Hart Lane. I have on occasions referred to it as the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. But as soon as I've said it, it's kind of like, oh, fuck, like, it's like a slip of the tongue. Mm. It's not, yeah.
But you know, it's been White Hart Lane since 1897. You know, Arsenal moved to a new stadium, so they've got no history of Ashburton Grove, so they're not going to call it that. But you know, as Immortal Technique once said, in 100 years from now, everyone listening to this will be dead, and at that time, it won't be White Hart Lane anymore. So, you know, I mean, there's things that we hold on dear, and I hold on to White Hart Lane dearly, but 100 years from now, there'll be kids who will be calling it Google or, I don't know, the fucking Durex Stadium or whatever the fuck. It's just one of those things.
But is it important to you, T, to refer to it as White Hart Lane now, or do you not give a shit at all?
For me, yes.
Yeah.
For me, yes. But there is going to come a point when, you know, maybe 50 years from now, when it's known as something else by everyone else. I don't want to be the one weirdo in the pub saying, no, it's fucking White Hart Lane, when no one's called it that in 30, 40 years. I'm not a massive traditionalist like that. I mean, you know, there's lots of people around my age, mid-40s, not 54, as Clever said, who bang on about fucking 90s hip-hop. I'm okay. Like, well, it was great. I lived through it, but there's great stuff being made now. Don't fucking pin yourself in an old era. I don't want to be that guy.
I can imagine. I feel like you will be that guy. And like in this weird pub, God knows what's going on in this pub, but I still hope...
Stan Smith's pub.
Yeah. Still hope that there is a like piss-stained carpet, and T's like 85 years old, and he's on his own. And he's sweating because he's drunk way too much beer, and every time he'll think that he hears someone mention the Google Stadium, and in his belligerent state, went, "It's fucking White Hart Lane, you cunt," and then we'll go back to swaying.
You know what? I like that. I really like that for myself. You know,
I hope so.
It's picking me up from the pub drunk. Mm. He said, "Dad, you've done it again." I said, "Yeah, sorry, man. But someone called it the Google Stadium. I had to fight someone. I had to throw hands."
Yeah, I've done it again, but I was right. That's right.
Exactly. I was fucking right.
Fuck you, son. Okay.
Commercially, though.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's
yeah. You know what? There was a tweet earlier on. There's a tweet earlier on from Billy about, can you imagine opposition fans having to use like Yahoo and Art of Vista because we've got a Google Stadium? Because obviously, a lot of Spurs fans don't use Fly Emirates because it's linked to Arsenal. I mean, imagine not using Google. That's like synonymous with everything.
And every part of their being would be reminded that Tottenham Hotspur exists. Like, I do everything I can not
to... to get iPhones.
Yeah, they have to. I mean, it's you know, it's going to do a lot for Apple, you know, in terms of fans from other clubs. But every time they boot up Google to, and this is like on every level. It's like when they need to find something out, or they need to find a new level of porn, or they need to find what NordVPN are about. They can't do it without thinking about Spurs. So even if we don't win another trophy,
I like that.
Even if we don't win another trophy ever, we're still in your heads. We exist forever because of Google. Social Finance agreed a 20-year deal worth a total of $400 million, which is about £361 million in total, for about £18 million a year to place the name on the Los Angeles Rams and Chargers Stadium. That was in 2019. Now, neither of you, and nor am I, accountants or understand the value of that, but if it's 2019... and they're paying $400 million, what would Google be paying for the rights to take over White Hart Lane? You're thinking $600 million.
Well, what you've got to think about is that we moved into the stadium 3 years ago now. So any less than massive money, then leave us like a mug, because you've held out. It's been 3 years now. While COVID is not over, we've got full stadiums now. So there's no excuse to kind of put on the back burner. We're reaching a point now where, you know, we've had a successful number of NFL games at White Hart Lane. So we need to be getting that sort of money. Otherwise, what is the point of you holding out? There's no point if you're holding out. I mean, I think all three of us, well, I'll speak for myself in this, that it would be good if it was Nike, because Nike make the kits. You know, Nike sponsoring the stadium would just be good. But Google is like fucking humongous, and the money you're talking about, Flav, it's got to be that sort of money. It has to.
Yeah, massive.
The fact that we've held out 3 years.
This sort of deal circumnavigates financial fair play because it's sort of like capital gains. It's the amount of money that you create and generate as a football club. the same thing that Manchester City had done. Like, again, what Haaland, how they pay Haaland nearly £1 million a week is because of using sponsorship deals to of companies that, I'm going to say this really carefully, just in case the minute opportunity that someone might sue us. But they're using, actually, fuck it. They're finding a way to pay Haaland's wages, and it isn't simply from Premier League money. But this does give us an opportunity to invest huge amounts of money into the first team. Rick, do you think that will happen?
No, I think we obviously will, as to say that, yeah, we've had this little
to some degree, it will,
and we will show it by investing in the first team. But also, it's a £1 billion stadium that we've got loans for, and this, that, and the other. And I think we will go some way to either paying some of that off, or in the original plans, wasn't there a hotel, a museum, like a park area, or some shit like that. And it might be the first bricks that go down for that.
Ruffle?
So, hopefully. Tottenham themed ruffle.
Could you imagine a high class ruffle?
you get your Android phone out, and you just scan in, and there you go.
You get 20%
off. All of the same ecosystem.
Season ticket holders get 20% off. You imagine the fact that they've been resistant in building flats and the demolished homes in Tottenham. And one of the things they would do is just build a high-class brothel just on the edge of the park lane. Just for the discerning gentleman.
I don't know if you guys have been around King's Cross, but the Google offices look fucking amazing. So
there you go.
I think it kind of ties in that, you know, if Google do get to Tottenham, because it's not that far from King's Cross, the offices look amazing. So it'd be like, I don't know, maybe because Google's got a massive ecosystem, and it just makes sense. And this is probably
there is a brothel.
The biggest. That is loads. I mean, you got the Flying Scotsman if you need some low class low class trippers.
Google don't give a shit. Why did I say that? They love it. They absolutely love it.
I'm sure they do. But this is this is the first kind of name who's been solidly linked to Tottenham in terms of a sponsorship for the naming rights. It's been fleeting speculation of Nike and Amazon and other huge organisations, but this feels like the most concrete speculation that I've had of Google. So it's positive.
We were going to do a quarter season review of the season, quarterway view of the season thus far, but I think we should go on to the questions, and we'll do that in the latter podcast that we're going to do in the latter part of this week. So sometimes the thing that I can't speak, and yet I've made a career out of it, is fucking mental. Make any sense at all. Sandwich, indeed. Pepe Silva, he says, if Levy hands you a £65 million check and tells you to get someone in January, who is it based on the performances so far? So we're going to pretend that all of us have a sort of wide-reaching knowledge of football everywhere on the planet. But is there anyone out there that you think that if we laid down £65 million that we could get and it would improve us? And why isn't it James Maddison? Rick?
I was going to say...
Go.
I was going to say him, but... Barella, does he play a similar role?
I don't know who he is.
Nicola Barella, does he play a similar role?
I don't know.
I probably got the role wrong, but I think Maddison is the obvious choice. But Newcastle being linked with him just kind of put a fly in the ointment there. I think Maddison is probably a player that's clearly what we need and would be great. So go on, Rick.
What about you, Rick? Barella?
There's a player in the Bundesliga. No, any joke.
that's such an in-joke. Anyone who isn't a patron won't know why that's an in-joke. If you want to get in the in-jokes, then you can pay by going patreon.com/fightingcock. But don't feel obliged, because the joke isn't even that good. But yeah, Rick, tell us about the Bundesliga.
I would probably go with Maddison as well.
What do you think he does? What is it that he does? Like, what?
What I'm looking for is someone that can play central, like central midfield, where we've got Højbjerg, Bentancur, but that's just a bit more creative and can weigh in a lot more with the goals. I just feel like sometimes there is a gap between our front three and our midfield, and then where our wing backs are supporting, that there just isn't enough in how much we're creating assists and goals. And I think Maddison, with his, you know, Premier League experience and just how many goals he fucking gets and creates, it would be with that money as well, and where Leicester are, I think we could do it. That'd be my pick.
Outside of what's happening at Arsenal and Man City and Foden specifically, then Maddison is the guy. And whether you like him or not, he would add something to our forward play. And to see him in a Spurs shirt, I think it would be a bit of a statement signing, because, you know, the same way we went and got Perisic and we got Bissouma, we bought players, good players from teams that aren't anywhere near on our level, but players that will systematically improve what we're doing. I think James Maddison is a great, great shout. Let's end it here on this question, which is from Alex Bryson. He says, surely you have some opinions on the newly fabricated ultras at Woolwich. T, I think you're best placed to answer this. It's not. I don't see an issue with it. Like, as much as I hate it, I really, really hate the fact they're enjoying themselves. Like, if it was us, it would be the same. Like, ultras or not, or how young or old your fan base is, you're going to support your club the way you want to support it. And all I saw, and I hate it, when they beat Liverpool at the weekend, was an end that went off. And that isn't something that you generally associate with Arsenal. And if that was what is an ultra, if that's what an ultra's culture creates, then, you know, long may it continue. Not for them, but everybody else.
You know, I mean, you know, it's 2022. I can't say what I'd really, really like to say, because obviously I get in a lot of trouble.
Go on, give it a go. Don't be a wholesome human being.
Yeah, try it.
Try being a wholesome human being. Go on.
I wouldn't have been against the stadium collapsing on them. But
good. I wasn't expecting that at all. The entire stadium collapsing on them because they're enjoying their football.
I don't want them having any fun. Fuck them. But done myself in now.
The entire stadium collapsing in on itself on all of those people, all the families.
Exactly. Mate, collateral damage.
It is what it is.
But
Spurs, isn't it? Spurs.
Well, exactly. I fucking hate those cunts. But, you know, they're having fun, and we'll see when, you know, they eventually lose a few games, they'll still be there. Yeah. I mean, to be fair, what just made me think of was a Frankfurt game. I think there was a lot of said about how Frankfurt fans sang throughout, but it just becomes a bit of a drone after a while, because for me, good fans ebb and flow with the game. So you could be 2-3-0 down, the same as if 3-0, kind of ebb and flow. And, you know, I'm not a fan of ultras, but ultimately, I mean, I do kind of echo what Flav says, that, you know, they're there and they're making noise, and I guess it's positive, even if it is those cunts.
This is the bet that
I would have loved to have seen under the rubble of a stadium.
Yeah.
Hands. The stadium's in the rubble, you've got hands out, just hoping that someone can reach them, and I'm just like, no one's going to reach you. Fuck you.
I was going to just sort of back it up. I'm not on T's level. I would say that I'm involved in the same conversation. Just say this is the best you're going to ever have it. This is what you're having right now, which is essentially the same thing that you've experienced twice in the past 20 years, 20, 25 years where there are only two teams that are in your position that haven't won the league, and they were both you. And you're all bouncing around and you're happy. This is the best it's going to get. And the greatest thing about it, and, you know, I've got no time for Manchester City, I've got no time for Haaland, is there's no chance that Arsenal can stop Manchester City winning this league. So this is your best moment. And yet, Manchester City and that conglomerate of a football club are going to stop you from doing it. The real fucking kick in the nuts is that it's Leicester that stopped us from doing it. And that is the
Spurs.
I mean, I love Spurs for it. I love Spurs for it, and it's always going to be the way. Ricky T, thank you so much. And we beat Everton.
My pleasure.
We beat Everton the weekend. We'll beat him in the weekend. We're Frankfurt. Everton.
Well, Gordon suspended for Everton. So that's a positive. And Frankfurt will get walloped because we created loads of chances and we should have walloped them. Just wasn't clinical. But on Wednesday, going to get a goal early on and smash them.
Yep.
So, yeah.
And we're going to beat Everton.
Can be a decent atmosphere.
Yeah. Are you going, boys? Are you going?
Yep, I'm going.
Yeah, mate.
Proper fans. All right, that is the Fighting Cock podcast. Thank you so much for downloading and being a part of the Fighting Cock, and the 30% of you that are still with us, we love you deeply because you are
love
the most
you
important.
All.
Yeah, man, all of them.
Network.